How's it going, everybody? Brian Alvarez here on Wrestling Observer Live. We are here every day, Monday through Friday, noon Pacific, 3 Eastern, Sundays, 3 Pacific, 6 Eastern, Sports Byline USA Radio Network, Sirius Satellite Radio, the American Forces Network, Cable Radio Network, iHeartRadio, iTunes, TuneIn Radio. List goes on and on. The most listened to daily pro wrestling and mixed martial arts radio show in the world. I got a very busy day today here on the show. There's a lot of news today. We're also going to be joined in the final segment of the show by Carl Stern. We will be getting Dr. Lucha back on the show here in the next few weeks, but Carl Stern is on today. He's going to be talking about a new series that he is doing here in July. 30 shows over 30 days, the Carl Stern July Wrestling Marathon. We're going to talk to him about that this year. I'll take your questions as well. If you've got anything you want to ask Carl, it's going to be a fun time. That is the final segment of the show. We've also got news today on a very sad death. CMLL wrestler Thunder passed away yesterday at, I believe, the age of 32. Passed away due to lung cancer. We'll talk about that on the program here today. We've got an update on Jerry the King Lawler and his domestic assault charges as a result of the issue that he had recently with his girlfriend that resulted in him being suspended from WWE. Now, how that plays into his future, I guess we'll find out. But the charges, as of today, have been dismissed. We'll talk about that. We'll talk about the return of an NXT superstar who has been out of action for a long, long time. If you are one of those individuals who has been looking to cut the cord, but you're a big fan of Raw and you don't want to miss SmackDown, we've got an update for you on how you may be able to watch those shows for just $25 a month. We can also talk about NXT, Lucha Underground, Ring of Honor, all those television shows. If you want to give us a call today, 425-488-0525, toll free, 844-411-5411. And you can send your text messages to 425-780-7566. We're going to kick it off after the break. Observer Live on the Sports Byline USA Radio Network. We are back here on Wrestling Observer Live. Brian Alvarez here, WrestlingObserver.com. We are joined by Mike Sempervivi, also of WrestlingObserver.com. We've got good news today, bad news today. We've got Carl Stern coming on in the final segment of the show. We got callers on the line. Lots of news. And unfortunately, it starts out with some sad news. The death of Thunder, former CMLL wrestler Thunder, who was 34 years old. Luke Fordward, the CMLL wrestler known as Thunder, passed away today. This is from WrestlingObserver.com. Daniel Lopez, who is El Satanico, his trainer and the father of Fordward's girlfriend, had reported a few days ago that he was gravely ill and needed a miracle. It is believed that he passed away due to lung cancer. It may have actually been stomach cancer. I don't have the words to thank everyone for so many prayers and blessings, wrote Lopez. Friends, family, confidants, every fan since all of this has served. Luke Fordward Thunder, member of the family, has left us today. I know that thanks to all of you, best wishes, his road was illuminated. This is a translation from Fredo Esparza. It hurts so much that we are what we are going through, and today he has beaten the damned cancer. But starting today, we have much more strength from all of you to continue fighting, and more importantly, to cover to Gran Luchadora, my daughter Daniela. And with the help of our angel that is now with God, we will come out of this difficult moment. He had been working all sorts of CMLL shows until a couple of months ago. And there are a lot of reports out that maybe he didn't even find out about this cancer until a month ago. So apparently he was very far along when he found out about it and just passed away yesterday. A very sad story. We'll have Dr. Luchon in the next couple of weeks to talk about Thunder. Oops. Hey.
Hi.
Had you muted.
You were going to say I wasn't here again, weren't you?
I had you muted before. No, I could see you were here. I just couldn't hear you.
Yeah, it's not much to add on with Thunder. I didn't know he was around for so long. There was a really tiny promotion that my co-host Adam Summers always got a kick out of in Japan called Okinawa Pro. And that was a long time ago. That was over 10 years ago that he had gotten his start there. apparently after coming up from Australia. So I didn't even know he had been around for that long, but still so young and just so sad. It's been a long year for deaths. And I know it is every year. You know, we always talk about, oh, God, 2016 is the worst ever. 2015 is the worst ever. But boy, there have been some heavy ones this year, and this just adds to it.
We've also got the news today. I guess we'll find out what this even means, but this from the commercial appeal in Memphis. The domestic assault charges were dismissed Friday against Jerry Lawler, 66, and his fiancée Lauren McBride, 27. Ted Handsome, Lawler's attorney. Yeah.
Sorry.
Not kidding. Said it was a big understanding. It will not happen again. We are happy with the outcome. The two were charged with domestic assault after an incident in June at Lawler's home in East Memphis. They argued. Lawler held her against a kitchen counter, McBride said. She said he hit her in the front left side of the head, pushed her against a stove. She said he retrieved an unloaded pistol, placed it on the counter, and said, "Go ahead and kill yourself." Lawler said they argued over her lying about where she had been. She was intoxicated. He tried to prevent her from leaving in her car. She scratched the right side of his face, threw a candle at him, and kicked him in the groin. Lawler contended that she got the gun from the garage and had threatened to kill herself. Both were arrested when officers could not determine a primary aggressor. The charges will be expunged from their records. So I guess we'll find out if Lawler just ends up back on TV next week. I have not seen any statement from WWE as of this moment, but all charges expunged.
It will be interesting, and I don't know how much passion Jerry Lawler exactly has to stay in the position. I know he probably gets a kick out of it and everything, although I know, you know, the whole deal with SmackDown was a change to his schedule and everything anyway, but I wonder if WWE will just go ahead and continue to take this as a reason to de-emphasize Jerry Lawler at 66 years old when they do have other people there, and maybe it is time for a change. I don't know if for any reason, because things have been dropped between the two parties, if they feel any reason that to put him back in the exact same role. But, you know, him on a pre-show or him doing something else. Again, I was a fan of how Jerry Lawler has turned it around this year next to Mauro Ranallo. I think their combination has been great. But with that said, it would not. Yeah, at this point, maybe it is time to move on in that role, in that capacity, and then let Jerry do something else if you are going to bring him back. And he's got the desire to come back.
Let's see what's going on in the phones before we get to more news here today. Studio line, you're on the air. What's up?
This is Ryan from Crumbling.
This better be a good one, Ryan. It's a busy day. What's up?
Yeah, it's a question for Carl Sturm, pretty much. I want to know who was the least drawing champion. In my opinion, it was Chris Benoit, because I once had tickets to see him against Triple H, and they canceled the show. It was in front of Vince McMahon's mother, probably, because it was within 15 minutes of her house.
They canceled the show? What are you talking about?
The ticket sales were so bad that they canceled the show, and also, it wasn't just an isolated incident, because I know they moved some of the shows, like they postponed them. I think they're waiting to get the title off of Benoit.
Huh. So he was the least drawing champion in the history of professional wrestling anywhere in the world because you went to a show that got canceled.
Well, I also said that there are other shows that got postponed, but I don't think he's the least drawing, but I mean just in my time period, you know.
In your time period. Okay. So it's all about Ryan. I got it. I'll ask Carl Sturm. Who was the least drawing champion in Ryan from Cumberland's period? I'll make sure that we get a good answer from him later on.
You know, the thing is, I bet you Carl will have one.
He may.
You know, I wonder if this, you know, the default answer in this day and age is always, you know, Kevin Nash of this, you know, past 20 years or whatever. I know, you know, he gets, you know, associated with it. But I guess it depends on how you view a world title and at what period you're talking about. Because, you know, I guess technically the AWA still had a world title when Larry Zbysko was defending it in front of a green screen.
Got a text message here saying WWE just added the last remaining episodes of Nitro from 2000 to the network today. I look forward to you and Vinny reviewing these retro episodes. Yeah, I can't wait.
Oh, my God.
Cheap plug for Death of WCW. If you want to watch those 2000 episodes, do not do it without having the Death of WCW by your side to read about that period, because it's actually even worse than what you see on television by a wide margin.
It really, really is. And it's
actually, hold on, one
amazing
other thing. I want to mention that this guy says 2000, but somebody in WWE told me today that every single episode of Nitro ever is either now available or will very soon be available. So everyone to the bitter end.
I don't think WWE, they have no reason to go through and cut out any warts on that product because they love to bury it so much. But it is, when people watch it, because somebody brought up something about production, I think it was at ROH, or so they brought up how bad something was, and it was like we both had to say, wait, slow down. Unless you were there, you actually have no idea how bad some of that stuff, or unless you've read Brian's book, you have no clue that this was on TNT and on TV. I mean, major, massive stations. You think about TNT being the number one cable station, and for what aired from WCW, things out of order, going to break at the wrong times, a bunch of backstage. I mean, the most amateur of mistakes that would happen minutes apart on a nationally televised show that still at its time had what? How many people when WCW died were still watching it? A ridiculous number of people. It was amazing.
Millions. Millions were still watching that show at the end. Bunch of Ryans from Cumberland. This guy here can't understand why. And really, when you think about this, is this really shocking? Weird that Ryan in Cumberland won't believe anything with overwhelming evidence, but believes crazy conspiracy theories with little. Dude, there's a lot of people like that.
You.
It ain't just Ryan. Are you kidding me? I'm the biggest skeptic around. I don't believe in anything. This person here says, oh, by the way, I want to mention, we've been talking about this. This I saw on PW Insider today. The Sling TV service, which is a web-based platform that streams cable networks, now has made the USA network available on their Sling Blue service, which costs $25 a month. All you need to access the service is internet. With a decent speed connection, you can now watch Raw on the service, and in a few weeks, SmackDown as well without cable TV. $25 a month.
I got to give it to them because they're trying to get me back with by sending me stuff.
I'm going
to
get that for vacation.
Well, if you're not a Netflix or a Hulu person per se, and you just kind of want to watch TV and you do have a decent enough stream, Sling is a really good service.
I don't know if producer Scott is aware, but this is Carl Stern's theme music. We'll be back with him in a while. Back in a moment, Observer Live, Sports Byline USA, Radio Network. We are back here on Wrestling Observer Live. Brian Alvarez here, WrestlingObserver.com. We are joined by Mike Sempervivi, also of WrestlingObserver.com. Tons of text messages here. This person says, according to an email from WWE, it says all Nitro episodes are on the network. So there you go. Every single one of them is up there. This person says, do you see yourself reviewing the invasion angle on Retro Tuesdays in 2020 after reaching the last Nitro? God, it'll be there in 2020. I can't even believe that. The Monday Night Wars seems like it stretched out a generation. And it was like a few years. It's nuts.
Shows you how big the impact is. I mean, you know, it's amazing. Those two boom periods that we lived through in the 80s and then the Attitude Era was, again, it was supernova style. I mean, a lot of people think, you know, how rockin' WWF was or how much money Jim Crockett Promotions was making. And you go back and you look and, you know, there's a lot of layers to that onion once you peel it back and you realize that it, at its core, you know, it was a very short period of time.
This person says, have you heard the rumors about the Cody Rhodes release being a work? There is a post on Reddit discussing it that is getting upvoted and a lot of other chatter. Well, here's what I can tell you about this. It's not a work. The guy has been released. He's got bookings all throughout the end of the year. Now, do I think that Cody Rhodes is never going to be back in WWE again? No. Do I think that he could be back later this year? Yes. But is it a work? Is it a fake release? No. The guy's gone. And if he never wants to come back, he's never going to come back. But I don't think that is the case.
Well, one of the theories that's kicked around about that is the fact that he has not taken any bookings with, say, like Ring of Honor or New Japan or something like that. Now, I don't know what went into that release, but it could be. And I know I'm not even – I have no – dog in this fight, so it doesn't really matter to me either way, and I really don't care either way. But you know, if they had a deal where it was negotiated where, look, you're not going to go to ROH, you can go to PWG because, you know, they'll sell the DVDs fine, you can go to
Well,
Evolve.
I'm sure they did say that.
Well, that's the whole thing. So it's like, I don't know if that's necessarily the reason to go conspiratorial, where it may be the case with somebody else. I don't know if that's necessarily the case with Cody.
But no, listen, so if you're under contract for 3 years and you decide with 2 years left, and this, I'm just throwing out these numbers, I don't know what Cody's deal was, but if you have 3 years on your deal and you decide a year in, you're done with this deal and you want to quit, the only way you're going to get out is you have to work out a release with them. And so if they agree to release you But the condition is that you can't go here and you can't go there. I mean, it's a conditional release, but you're still released. It's not like you're still with the company. I mean, people were talking about, well, you know, the first thing he did was work Evolve, which is working with WWE. So that's a clue that he's still under contract with WWE. And it's like, no, he's not, because EC3 did an angle with Evolve where he cut a promo on Triple H. Does that mean that EC3 is in cahoots with WWE? No. It's just they cleared it with WWE, and WWE, for whatever reason, didn't care. And so that's what they did. So, yeah, there may be conditions to where he can and cannot go. And there may be some sort of deal where, you know, go out for a while. And if you decide you want to come back, we'll bring you back again. I mean, it's all very likely. And I wouldn't even be surprised if he was back at the end of this year. But like it's not a worked release, if that's the term that people are using. Person here says, I have every Nitro and Thunder on VHS tape. I did until I threw them all in the dumpster.
Yeah, I gotta do that still.
This person here says, Deadspin had an article yesterday about MMA fighters believing in crackpot theories. Well, you know, part of it is MMA fighters, when they do interviews, I mean, they're not handcuffed like the WWE guys. So if you think that the WWE or the TNA guys, trust me, there are plenty of dudes there that have a lot of crackpot theories. But they know what to say and not say, and the MMA fighters just go on and say whatever the hell they want about anything.
Plus, look,
including Brock.
It takes a pretty, it takes a different person to want to get punched in the face. You know, it takes a different person sometimes. And those people have things to say. So, yeah. And I think what Brock has said, by the way, I think if anybody is outraged by any of it, you are faking it, because when it comes to Brock, this is nothing. I mean, look, everything he said is something you should expect. You may not like it or not, but it is par for the course.
Stephanie did some interview and was talking about how we don't necessarily endorse Brock's fight and blah, blah, blah. So Brock essentially was asked about this on a conference call and said he didn't give a damn. He didn't care what she said. He didn't care if this affected. He didn't care if he lost to Mark Hunt, whether it affected his drawing power or not. Brock is all about Brock. Brock wants to go out there and he wants to be an athlete. And he wants to do this one more time. He doesn't care how this affects his WWE career. You got to remember, this dude's making so much money for this fight. And he's a family man that lives on a farm and he wants to make his money. He's not a mark for professional wrestling. He doesn't care. And that's one of the reasons he makes so much money and he can do whatever he wants. Not everyone can get away with this, obviously. He also was asked yesterday about Mark Hunt, who claimed that he was all juiced up. And he said, I've been dealing with that my entire life. I'm a white boy and I'm jacked. Deal with it. What do you want me to say? He also added that he hasn't followed much of anything in terms of social media regarding his fight with Mark Hunt. I haven't followed much of anything. I never have. I don't have a Twitter account. I don't have Facebook. It is what it is. To me, it's all BS. I don't want a world where Brock Lesnar's on Twitter.
How about on the Book of the Face?
No, of course not.
Brock,
his wife, maybe.
Putting out pics of his kid on the first day of school and on the way home. I can't see that happening. Buying ice cream, hanging out. Oh, by the way, somebody, a very fine person, I don't know if he wants his name released or not, did send me a DM here on Twitter. John Fitch once told me the world currency would collapse and to put all of your money in precious metals and Bitcoin. Hopefully, if this man did that, he did not put anything in the sterling pound for right now.
Let's go to the studio line on the subject of conspiracies. Who's this?
This is Kenny from Gallatin, Tennessee.
Yes, Kenny.
Anyway, it's funny you mentioned something about Twitter. Mike, I don't know if you have checked your Twitter, but I had sent something, and since we're talking about Nitro, I thought it would be great for Battleground as a scenario for the Shield triple threat. They can relive one of the greatest Nitro moments where Ambrose, you have all three of them. They get ready to pounce, but then, like, out of the blue, they stop. And Rollins and Reigns both poke Ambrose, the finger poke of doom, twice. They both do a double pin. They all get up, have a big laugh. They reunite. And Vince comes out. He's angry. He sends out the Geek Squad. And S.H.I.E.L.D. beats up the Geek Squad. And then in a weird scenario where Stephanie McMahon and Triple H comes out, and where Triple H looks like he's ready to beat up on the S.H.I.E.L.D., Stephanie turns on her husband, Triple H, and aligns with the Shield.
Wow, that sounds like a great idea. Have you read Death of WCW?
Yes, I have.
Good, okay. Well, then I understand the context of your call now that you tell me that. My friend,
can you imagine?
I don't think that's going to happen, but we may have some rigmarole, and hopefully it will be better than that one.
Anyway, I just like to say that I watched, or I actually listened to your Josh Gross interview, both that and on Wrestling Observer Radio. I thought it was a great interview. It gave me good insight on that interview. I just thought I wanted to say that, and thanks for taking my call.
Well, thank you. I very much appreciate that, and thank you for reading my book.
Josh is really great, too, and I'm happy he was on yesterday with Dave, and I'm happy you guys did the other show as well, too, and it's a book everybody should run out and pick up, because it is one interesting story, a very, very interesting story, and if you are a fan of Japanese wrestling, you just don't know the history of Japanese wrestling if you don't go back and study that match and see how it affected so many things, obviously, most of which being Antonio Inoki and New Japan's fortunes, which came after that. But can you imagine if they did some scenario like that, where that's how they do the brand split? They each have a belt, and then they can have, I guess Dean Ambrose would be the, like, they could have Freebird rules on the show, and like Dean Ambrose can go from show to show representing the Shield.
This person here says, Ambrose on Talk is Jericho outed Bray, Bo, and the Usos as believers, and Dean has a different take as well. Well, does that surprise you that Dean might have a different take on things?
I would.
And by the
so.
Way, what does that mean they were outed as believers?
What does that mean? Believers? Like Justin Believers?
No,
Justin
but like believers in what? Everything?
I have no idea.
Listen.
In the title reign of IRS and the Million Dollar Man, as well as the Samoans, I could see them being believers in those two title reigns.
When we're talking about UFOs or Bigfoot or the Loch Ness Monster or any of that kind of stuff, it's not like you're either a believer or you're a non-believer. You've got to take each thing as it comes. You can't just go out there and say, I don't believe in anything, even though I said that earlier.
Uh-huh.
But you can't go out there and believe in everything either, or you're Ryan. Although Ryan on Twitter, which I don't even know why I retweeted something from Ryan in Cumberland, but I did. Ryan says, I don't believe everything I say on the radio. I just think there is a chance it could
Either
be
is
true.
Brian.
A chance it could be true. He doesn't even mention what there's a chance it could be true. Take one more call. Toll-free line, you're on the air.
What's up, guys? It's Eric and Nicole.
What do you believe in, Eric?
As far as what?
Everything.
I don't believe anything either. I'm with you.
Okay, cool. What's up?
Big skeptic. So what's the deal with Del Rio, man? We're 3 months shy of a year, and he's still heel. I know the plan was to turn babyface down the line. You think you're going to finally turn him once they get their crap in order with this brand split?
I'll bet Vince is thinking, you know, we paid this guy a lot of money, but he just can't get over.
He's already cheering himself on with all, and they're saying CCC in the crowd. He's already working towards it. I mean, why don't they just pull the trigger?
You know, Eric, sometimes I think that they don't do things because if they do, it will show the world that they were dumb, that they were wrong. Like, Del Rio should have been a babyface the moment he returned, and they turned him heel, and it was an abject failure. So I think they think if we turn him babyface now, people will know we screwed up. So we'll just keep him heel like we did it right. Back in a moment, Observer Live, Sports Byline USA, Radio Network. We are back here on Wrestling Observer Live. Brian Alvarez here, WrestlingObserver.com. We are joined by Mike Sempervivi, also of WrestlingObserver.com. Carl Stern is on the line. Carl, that's Rush!
That's right. Fantastic.
We played your entrance. Yeah, we played your entrance theme a little bit earlier on. Scott didn't even know it, but he did inadvertently. So this was meant to be here today. What's going on?
Oh, not much. How about you, Brian? The things are going very, very busy here in the summer for the fourth or fifth year, I guess, in a row. I've committed myself to doing a show every single day at WrestlingObserver.com. And full length, too, man. We're not jipping nothing. It's full length shows, doing biographies every single day this month. And Brian, this is like deep cuts. This is like this month, this year, it's going to be people you normally wouldn't really think about getting a show of their own, because the theme this month is going to be people who made me a fan of wrestling or who kept me around as a fan of wrestling. So it's really kind of a personal experience. And so it's going to be maybe different. It's, I've done, you know, all the big biographies in the past of the all the people you expect, Steve Austin, The Rock, Hulk Hogan, Triple H, all those people I've done biographies of before. So this month I get to do some really cool ones on some people that hopefully a lot of folks may not know that about, or like in my case, people that maybe you just knew a little bit about, remembered them from your childhood, and now I get to research them and do whole shows on them. And there's a few big names in there, just some names I'd missed in the past, but a lot of these guys are people that you wouldn't normally think of. And I'm not going to spoil everybody that's in there. There's going to be some pretty cool surprises. And it covers the whole world, too, not just the southeastern United States, not just the United States. But I've got some biographies coming from Mexico and Japan as well. Plus, I've even got one show in there that's not even a pro wrestler, just somebody that crossed into pro wrestling, had a huge impact in wrestling, but wasn't
gotta be Trump.
Really, officially a wrestler.
Now, Carl, are you, I know I probably ask this every year when you do these series here, but are you ranking them? Like, are we going to have to wait until the final day to find out the man who kept you into wrestling the most of all in the history? Like myself, for example, may have been that man. Is it ranked in order of importance, or is it just completely random?
Oh, this is completely random. It's a more stream of consciousness off the top of my head. Actually, the guy who got me, who I was first said made me a fan of wrestling, actually, we're getting him first. He's up today, and that's a guy named Mr. Olympia. His actual name's Jerry Stubbs. He wrestled a lot under both names in the Deep South, Southeastern Wrestling, Continental Wrestling, Mid-South Wrestling is primarily where he worked. And again, he's a guy, if you lived in those regions, you certainly know he wrestled with and against all the bigger stars of that era. He was had programs both against and teamed with people like Ted DiBiase and Junkyard Dog and Mr. Wrestling 2. And so he's a guy who worked with a lot of the people who became big names in wrestling, but he himself never went national. And you might think, you might even say, well, it's because, you know, he wasn't as good as those guys, or maybe he lacked charisma, or maybe he lacked something. But actually, in the case of a lot of these guys, they were just content living in their area, not traveling all over the world. They wanted to stay close to home. In some cases, they even had other jobs and that they were had careers sank into, and so they never did. Jerry Stubbs was certainly contacted by both WWF and the Crockett promotion a few times, but WWF as well. He made a few tours of Japan, but as far as being a big national star, he really wasn't. But he was as good as any of those people, in fact, better than some. And I think a lot of people would be really surprised to hear about a lot of people like that.
Carl, we had so many people that listen to the show that are down in the Gulf Way from Texas down over through Florida, where Southeastern Championship Wrestling and Mid-South Wrestling were the biggest things going on. And there's where Mr. Olympia Jerry Stubbs was a big star down there. And I think because of the lack of magazine coverage that took place and the lack of syndication in the Northeast for Southeastern Championship Wrestling, people will dismiss it, but kind of talk to the rest of the nation out there, if you can, just a little bit of how influential Southeastern was, because you can't tell the story of Arn Anderson and how he developed, especially as a promo, if you don't talk about what he did with Jerry Stubbs, which we're lucky enough to see some of that on YouTube right now. But as far as Southeastern in general, how can you apply it and make it acceptable to kind of the people listening who weren't from that area, who grew up on it?
Well, Mike, that's a great question. I appreciate you asking it, because it is very important to the national expansion of the U.S. The promotion was based out of Pensacola, Florida. A lot of people call it the Alabama promotion because it really primarily ran in Alabama. It was ran and owned by a guy named Ron Fuller. And Ron Fuller is of that famous Welch wrestling family, that Welches and Fields and Goldens and really get Nick Gulas and all that whole bunch. They really ran most of the wrestling east of the Mississippi River at one point in time. But he ran the promotion out of Pensacola, Florida, and a northern division out of Knoxville, Tennessee. And there were so many people that came through. You mentioned Arn Anderson. And Arn Anderson's story, you're absolutely right, can't be told without talking about Mr. Olympia, Jerry Stubbs. And we talk about that on today's show because he was that was one of his first big programs right out of the gate. Arn Anderson came in as Super Olympia, a mirror image of Mr. Olympia, and they did an angle based off that and ended up being a very good tag team. And I think if people will go on YouTube and look, they'll be shocked at how just how good a team they were. I mean, they were could compete with anybody nationally, but they were very isolationist. The southeastern area didn't want the magazines in there. They actively fought against bringing them in for some reason that really I've never fully understood. I've even talked to Ron Fuller about it, and I never really understood why he wanted the magazines out. They were part of the NWA. Ron Fuller was on the NWA board of directors, but they really didn't get outside their area much. And really, I think that kind of saved them to the end. They were one of the longer-lasting territories that didn't close down until later on in 1989 after a lot of the other places had been folded up. But because of that, they never got that big, but they were a successful company for a long period of time. And a lot of big guys come through. Hulk Hogan and Andre the Giant had one of their early big angles there out of Southeastern Wrestling, a very famous arm wrestling match that turned into a brawl very early on in Hogan's career. That's you go up and check that stuff out on YouTube, and a lot of the bigger stars came through there. And, of course, I grew up in that area, so a lot of the people we'll be talking about early on are people that are from the Memphis territory or the Southeastern territory or Mid-South or Georgia, but it certainly doesn't just stay in that one area, that one region.
Yeah, I'll let Brian ask you some questions here. I did want to point out, though, that, you know, you talk about Southeastern making it to the end. It's always interesting to see how, when WWF started their national expansion, how much of an impact they had on a city when they went into it. And a lot of talk, there's always the discussion of when they went into the Carolinas that they roundly got defeated and were pushed out of the area for a short period of time. When the WWF debuted, it was not in Alabama. It was not until August of 1984, and they had Andre the Giant against Big John Studd on the top of the card. They had the Junkyard Dog. Jesse Ventura was on the card. The East-West Connection. You know, you would think on paper a pretty good show. Drew 1,800 people to that show. Then went to Phoenix City and drew even less than that, and they were actually sent packing with their tail between their legs.
Yeah, they had a hard time starting off here. I was actually at that show in a couple of those early WWF shows. They even ran Boutwell Auditorium. And they sold pretty good a little bit later on in the area, but it took them a while to catch on. And they even used people like Mr. Wrestling 2, even brought in some of the Armstrongs for a one-on shot. But they had a tough time getting going here. And I think that had a lot to do with just how pervasive not only Southeastern, but Georgia Championship Wrestling is too. Remember, of course, we got it on the Superstation TBS, just like the rest of the country did. But we also, especially on the eastern side of the state, you got house shows, and you knew these people. And there was a lot of trade-off back and forth between Georgia Championship Wrestling and Southeastern Wrestling. And a lot of the people that I'll be talking about, especially early on this month, are people that work for both promotions. So a lot of these people you've probably seen on off the Superstation, if you grew up watching Georgia Championship Wrestling, Mr. Olympia just kind of wasn't one of those guys. He was went to high school with Robert Fuller, and so they were friends from really childhood, and he just kind of hung with them and made himself a pretty good living and a real good career, and still alive and well today, living over in the Georgia area, and just a super nice guy. And he, again,
got Falcon season tickets too. I wonder if we'll get them for the new stadium.
Well, I wonder. I don't know.
All right, listen, I'm jumping in here. I got some questions. Carl, as you're well aware, we've been watching all of this old NWA World Championship Wrestling Superstation stuff from 30 years ago. Please tell me that in your 30 days, one of the men who has kept you involved in this business as a fan was number one Paul Jones.
You know, it is so funny that you and Vince, when you review those shows, you really mirror my opinion of that.
Yeah, it's baffling.
Because I hated Paul Jones back in the day. I thought he was the dirt worst, most boring. And I have watched him with new eyes. He has reawoke. I have reawakened to the greatness of Paul Jones. You know, compared to today, there's no real characters like that anymore. The manager, so needs to come back in that role. Paul
Jones
actually ends up being pretty entertaining, much like David Crockett.
Listen, Carl, when I watch these shows, like you watch Ric Flair do a promo, you watch Dusty Rhodes do a promo, you watch any of J.J. Dillon, all these guys, they just blow you away at their promos. And so, yes, if you were growing up in that era and you saw all of these great promos, you'd watch number one Paul Jones and just be like, God, this guy sucks. Why is this guy even on the show? But in 2016, when we have no managers and when barely anybody can cut a decent promo, except like the real big stars like John Cena, everything is all scripted and everything like that. You listen to the announcers who absolutely suck. I mean, man, you look back and David Crockett, he's got so much energy. He's got so much life. He's such a mark for all of this. He's so excited about what goes on. And Paul Jones, I mean, sometimes he's out to lunch, but sometimes he does a promo and it's like, that was a great promo. I think it's just sometimes you look back and compare to today. Sometimes things back then were better. And quite frankly, sometimes things back then were a lot worse.
Hey, look, we wrestling needs a David Crockett today. It needs a guy on the show, whether he's an announcer, whether he's a character, no matter what, it doesn't matter, but somebody that is, oh my God, excited about what they're seeing. Somebody that is bought in hook, line, and sinker. Lance Russell was good at this too in his own way, much more low key than David Crockett, but David Crockett was excited. He loved this stuff.
Dude, sometimes I'm listening to him, I'm like, you got to get a straitjacket for this guy. He's going to go crazy.
I know, and wasn't it great?
It was great.
Fans, he represented what we were supposed to be feeling, and that's
common man
really kind of missing that. Yeah, exactly. The common man, the average fan, he was interpreting for us how we were supposed to be feeling, and it was great. We need that now instead of announcers, you know, filling us with facts and figuring really. Video game sound bites. It's like everything done in WWE now. Everything the announcers say are just off a list of about 500 phrases that they can clip for a video game, and none of that really excites me that much. David Crockett, I mean, pardon me, but look at him. He's awesome. I mean, he's just so enthusiastic.
He's amazing. We're going to head to a break, everybody. When we come back, we'll talk a little bit more about this. The brand new, the first episode of July, the Dragon King Carl Classic Wrestling July Marathon. Mr. Olympia Jerry Stubbs is on the website right now for subscribers. I've tweeted out a link for how you can sign up and hear all of these shows and 8,000 more. Back in a moment, Observer Live, Sports Byline USA Radio Network. We are back here on Wrestling Observer Live. Brian Alvarez here, WrestlingObserver.com, joined by Mike Sempervivi and Carl Stern, also of WrestlingObserver.com. And yes, before the break, I said 8,000 shows. I'm actually likely understating that, since that's not counting any of these shows done by Adam and Mike and Carl and all of our other hosts here. Carl is doing 30 shows over 30 days. If you are a fan of wrestling history, what a month to sign up. You can just sign up for a month, and once it's over, you can disappear for another year again if you like to. But I think if you sign up, you're really going to like what you get. And Carl, let's do one more quick plug. We got about a minute here. The Carl Stern July Marathon.
Well, here we go then. Actually, I'm going to correct Brian because he doesn't even know this, but there are 32 shows this month. There's a doubleheader on July 17th.
Oh, man.
Ooh. Couldn't even fit it in. 32 shows this month. And another surprise on top of that, today's show, and only today's show, is free for everybody. So pass it around. It's a free show, but that's the only one you're getting this month. Otherwise, to get the other 31 shows, you've got to join up to WrestlingObserver.com. And, I mean, come on, why are you not already? You get the Wrestling Observer. You get the Figure Four Online newsletter. The Wrestling Observer newsletter, for Pete's sake, is worth more than that. You get the other 31 shows. Join WrestlingObserver.com this month. Hey, this is the month to get on there. Classic wrestling by the ton.
All righty. I'm going to tweet out the link to sign up and also the link to the first show, which is free. So head up there and check that out. Carl, I want to thank you so much for doing the show today, and we need to get you on more often. And, of course, thanks, Mike, as always, all of the folks at Sports Byline USA, the callers and listeners, even Ryan. We shall talk to you again next time. Wrestling Observer Live on the Sports Byline USA Radio Network.